Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. It is Wednesday. It is 9:30 or thereabouts, which means it's time to talk to the great John McClain down in Houston, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to wow. We're going to be there soon, aren't we?
A week from Friday.
Looking forward
Friday
to that.
Friday the 13th, buddy.
Heck yeah. Let's bring in John now. John, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We are fantastic. I want to start with, I guess, a behind-the-scenes thing, but you're familiar with Everett Geerlings. He's been with the Houston Texans, and now it looks like he's coming to Tennessee in the communications department.
Yep, he was hired as the VP of communications, replacing Robbie Boren, who did a terrific job for almost three decades. And I've known Everett, worked closely with him. He is really good. It was time for him, like a good coordinator, to take over a department. I know everybody up there will like him. He's sharp. He worked for the Jets when he was young, and well, he's still young. Then he came to the Texans from the Raiders, and the team tried to keep him, but he wanted to move up there and have his own department. And I think you guys will like him. He's very smart, confident, got a lot of energy, and it's somebody you guys will be working closely with for a long time. And I told him, you got some big shoes to fill taking over for Robbie, and he's really excited to get up there, loves Nashville like everybody does, and is pumped about coming to work with the Titans.
Oh, that's great. John, we love having you on. And, you know, I got to bring this up, but Jim Marshall passed away. And we spent the last segment, John, talking about Jim Marshall. Kids today, and I know they don't look a lot into history, but they needed, if you play football, you need to know who Jim Marshall is. John, what was Jim Marshall's impact on the game of football and helping it become what it is today?
He played on one of the greatest defensive lines in history, the Purple People Eaters from Minnesota, who went to Super Bowls but couldn't win a Super Bowl because the AFC was so strong back then. And he played with two Hall of Famers, tackle Alan Page and then Carl Eller, and they just couldn't understand why Marshall couldn't get in the Hall of Fame. And I think he was a great player at times, and he was a consistently good player. His 270 consecutive starts are the most by any player in history other than Brett Favre. And he answered the bell, unfortunately, in his fourth year against the 49ers. He picked up the fumble, I think, and ran the wrong way and earned the nickname Wrong Way Marshall. Went to end zone, flipped the ball, wrong end zone, and it only cost him 2 points. But that's what he was noted for, and he was a class act and on a historical defensive line that had one of the coolest nicknames in history.
Yeah, you know, we talk 270 games, and these guys are revered, and there's not a lot of them left around. And it just hurts, you know, when I saw that he passed away. I remember watching the Super Bowl and Jim Marshall and all that. It just sucks, John, getting old because we lose guys like that.
Well, that's a fact of getting old. And Marshall, I met him several times up there. He was an icon in Minnesota, as you can imagine. And Bud Grant called everybody on the Hall of Fame committee a couple of times trying to get us to put Marshall in. And I think if you're going to have three defensive linemen in the Hall of Fame, you need to have won at least one Super Bowl, which they didn't do. But he was a great guy, a consistent player who answered the bell every time he was called on. Can you imagine a player today starting anywhere close to that many games as Jim Marshall?
No, there's no way.
Not at all.
Nope.
I mean, and one thing that I brought up when we were having this conversation, John, was we know the effects now more than we did back then of playing this game. It's a violent game. Everybody knows that. And the paychecks. I mean, these guys want to protect their investment in themselves. And so I think that all factors into some of the, you know, and you're going to have some guys that play longer than that, but it's going to have an impact on the longevity in the game.
I'll say one thing. When the rules were different back then, it was nearly impossible for an offensive lineman because they could not extend their hands. They had to keep their hands within their pads. And if you got Jim Marshall and Carl Eller and Alan Page coming off the line of scrimmage, and they can head slap you, which is illegal today, and they would head slap you to stun you, and then when they're getting around the edge, you couldn't extend your hands. You couldn't extend your arms to try to block them on the edge, to take them wide like they do today. And they changed those rules in 78. And I don't know how in the world offensive linemen like Ron Yeary, the greatest offensive lineman, I think, and Mick Tingeloff with the Vikings, how they those guys blocked back then compared to the way they can block today.
Oh, I totally agree with that. You know, it's funny, John, we talk about, you know, you sit in here and said back in training camp in the 70s how much beer the guys drink during training camp. It's funny, the nutrition back then and the eating and the working out was nowhere near what it is today, but yet those guys were just iron, man. And that's why when a guy like Marshall dies, it's really bad because there's not many of those guys left in the world.
One of the things about back then, Joe, was when they didn't have cafeterias in the facilities, most of the facilities were terrible. The locker rooms were terrible. And when they wanted to eat, they'd send a rookie to a McDonald's or a local burger place to bring burgers. And as soon as practice was over, they'd go to a local, like a beer hall and drink beer. And then at night, they'd drink beer. At training camp, when the players got off at 9:30, and it was the curfew, I think, was 11. The offensive linemen all drank, all had Broncos, would load up their ice chests in the back of their Broncos with beer ahead of time, and they would go out and guzzle a case in an hour and a half and then get up at 6 a.m. and go through two three-a-day practices. They did a lot of throwing up back then, but they always practiced. And, of course, they played unless it was a serious injury.
John McClain is with us from Houston. So we're now in the point where we're seeing the Titans' rookie quarterback, Cam Ward, and the Titans' top receiver in Calvin Ridley just gush over each other. He's the best. He's great to work with. All this stuff that we hear year after year. But I will say that we're also seeing that they've been putting the work in together. How important is that, John, that these two are getting on the same page? And whether it's, you know, praising each other or over-praising each other early on, how important is it that they get on the same page as early as they are?
Well, it's important, but everything comes out of their mouth. You know, of course, everybody's doing that all across the league. We got players here talking about how great it is to work with C.J. Stroud, and he's not even throwing. But he looks good, and he sounds good. And we're not going to be able to tell anything about Cam Ward, really, because they're not going to show anything in preseason. You know, Bill Callahan's going to keep everything under wraps. Till they start that first game, that's when you start your serious evaluation. You know, the media can keep track of every completion and incompletion and catch in training camp and OTAs and the mandatory mini camp. But until they get where they used to call, you shouldn't call it this anymore, where the bullets are live, that's when you start to evaluate players for real. And there's nothing, as you guys know, to elevate the excitement level for a quarterback taken high in the first round, especially if he's first overall. And the key thing that Cam Ward, from what I understand, has been doing behind the scenes is impressing his teammates with his capacity for learning, how hard he works, the respect he shows the veterans, and that's important. That's important because I remember Bum Phillips used to say, we asked him one time why he roomed black players and white players together. And he said, once they leave the facility, I have no control over them. But I want them to feel like a family. I don't want all the black players on one end, all the white players on another. I want them all to feel like family, because when times are the toughest, you're going to dig down deep, and you may not even realize it, but you're going to go a little bit extra harder to protect your family. And really, that's what every team and every head coach are trying to do now. You know, it's called culture. It's really attitude, is develop a family atmosphere where those players will do anything it takes to help the guys next to them.
Very well said. We'll have more with John McClain coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, continuing our conversation with John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to wow. John, we kind of had a little bit of a laugh. We got the NFL Network on in here, and John Robinson, former Titans GM, has been a guest this week. If you flip over to CBS Sports Network, Rand Carthon's doing that one. So the last two Titans GMs that Amy Adams Trunk is still paying are both doing TV now. But specifically on Robinson, do you think this is him kind of accepting that maybe this is where his career's gone, or do you think he's putting himself back out there to potentially get another bite at the apple when the next hiring cycle comes around?
Well, of course he'd like to get another bite of the apple. It's much harder for general managers than it is for head coaches. And I'm guessing, I don't know how many years John had left on his contract, but I'm guessing it probably has run out. And he knows he needs to be out there where people can see him and hear him. And I guess at some point he'll be hired as like an assistant GM or head of personnel, maybe by somebody who's worked with him before. But I think it's very smart for him to be out there doing that. And it's funny, I remember.
Nope, we lost John. We'll see if we can get him back because I think I knew where he was going there.
John got raptured. Congratulations, John.
Something happened there. I don't know.
Wish we were with you.
Do you think that J-Rob gets another crack at it?
He didn't get the Jags job.
Yeah.
That's pretty telling. I think Paul was talking, he had a great point. John has to go and explain Caleb Farley and Treylon Burks.
All right.
Beyond anything else.
John, we lost you for a second.
Yeah, I was just talking about Floyd Reese, too. Mm-hmm. It's funny about those former general managers there. They're set up for broadcast. And I think John, if he wants to get another job in personnel, he'll certainly get one. I think Rand Carthon will, too, obviously. He's got time left on his contract. So I think it's smart for former personnel people to do as much as they can talking about personnel.
Now, Floyd used to tell us that the reason that he did this and went media is because Sally told him he had to get out of the house.
I think that's a great, great reason. And we used to tell Floyd. Floyd admitted he lied all the time. And I told him, I said, now that you're doing radio, are you telling the truth for a change? He goes, most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time being the key word there. Do you think that that Robinson should, because obviously what hurts him is, you know, Caleb Farley, not as much Isaiah Wilson, because, I mean, I think everybody just missed that one. I mean, I think it's more Caleb Farley because he was hurt, and then obviously the trade of A.J. Brown. But do you think he should get more credit for picks like Kevin Byard and obviously Derrick Henry?
Well, of course he should, and they took a hell of a chance, as you guys know, Farley, because of the knee injury, I think it was.
Back.
And the trade for A.J. Brown, which I still don't understand, was I was trying to think the worst trade in this franchise's history was trading strong safety Kenny Houston to Washington, and he went on to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But I would have to say in this franchise's history, A.J. Brown's right up there with that. If he goes to the Hall of Fame first ballot like Kenny Houston, he might turn out to be the worst trade, and that's the one that'll haunt him. But you got to get back in. You got to be in personnel. Like a guy like David Ziegler, You know, David Ziegler, he was great personnel guy. He got a general manager's job, got fired. Now, of course, he's back in personnel. That's smart. And because when the organization starts to win and gets good players, and they start to look on who works with the general manager. And so I think that's a great avenue to take. And if you're not going to do that, get on TV, ESPN or the NFL Network. And it doesn't work for all of them, of course. We're never going to see Mike Tannenbaum get another general manager's job. But some of them do.
John, The Athletic came out with a report the other day, a list, the top 25 high school recruits in the 21st century. And number one was Vince Young. And you're in Houston. He's in Houston. What do you recall, John, about the hype around Vince coming out of high school and obviously the Texas and ending up with the Tennessee Titans?
It's interesting because I would have said Jadeveon Clowney, and who also may have been the most hyped player coming out because we had to see 10,547 times that hit he made on the run
right
against Michigan, which kid's helmet came off. And Vince was the number one player in the country, according to USA Today. And he committed early to the University of Texas, so it wasn't like a big recruiting battle. And I asked Vince at an event about 2 months ago, and I said, what do you think that you would get today if you were coming out of high school? And I didn't even finish the sentence, and he looked up and he goes, kind of the heavens is millions and millions. And RG3 was there, and he came from a smaller school that in Coppers Cove, Texas, where he got a little bit of attention before he went to Baylor, but Vince was the guy. Everybody wanted him to come to the Texans because he grew up so close to the Texans, won that national championship for Texas, but they kept David Carr over Vince Young.
Do you still think that was a mistake, John?
They had hired Gary Kubiak, who was a great quarterback coach, because they liked Carr a lot, but they wanted a quarterback coach like Kubiak to coach him and see if he could get out of him what the previous regime did not, and after 1 year they cut him and traded for Matt Schaub.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, mistakes. Was the J.J. Watt one, John, was that the one that was just the top one the Texans knocked out of the park? Because he was good at Wisconsin. I'm not sure we knew he would be great in the NFL.
Nobody knew he'd be great. I didn't know anything about him until he put on a great show at the Combine in 2011. It's the same thing that Mario Williams had done in 2006. And people are like talking about him and like they were Superman. And nobody paid any attention to him up to that point. And Wade Phillips, the new defensive coordinator in 2011, he wanted the Missouri outside linebacker that went to San Francisco and had all the drug problems. It was a great pass rusher, and Watt was the second choice. The 49ers traded up ahead of the Texans to take him, and the Texans got stuck with Watt. And when they announced him, the fans at the stadium had come for a fan fest, booed like crazy.
John, thanks as always. We will do it again next week, and we'll get with you on the day because I know we got to change some things up a little bit.
Guys, thank you very much as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us here on the program, as he always does. And, of course, he is presented by Maple Street Biscuits, Wake Up to Wow. It's funny looking at, you know, the recruiting list that, like, is out, you know, the Athletic doing their list of number 25 made me laugh.
Yeah, we went through all the lists yesterday, and it was, we're like, huh? What? Huh?
Yes. Not a Tennessee player on there.
No. No,
and from, I mean, this is what, 25 years?
Yep.
And Dorial Green Beckham is number 25.
But as I told Dr. Crane yesterday, this is high school. This is coming out of high school.
No, I know. So it's just funny how it all
is it not? I mean, it truly is. When you look at the recruits, like the 5 stars and 4 stars, you know, like, oh, that should have been there. There's a lot of those guys who end up in the league, but guys like that, like, what the hell?
I mean, for all practical purposes, for this list, it it only matters what they do in college because that's what you're recruiting them to do. I mean, at that point.
Right. Yeah.
Vince, one of the greatest college players of all time.
True.
Being number one. Travis Hunter, one of the greatest college players of all time.
Keep on going, man.
Trevor Lawrence, same thing. Adrian Peterson, same thing. Leonard Fournette, I mean, Clowney. You know, Andre Smith doesn't get enough credit, and he was pretty good in the league. He lasted a while,
you know,
a guard, but Jeremiah Smith. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty good list when you're just thinking of you, but it's hard to separate the two.
It's extremely hard because, like, well, he didn't make it in the NFL.
Yeah, right, but that doesn't matter.
Then you flip it over. It's like, all right, what about Drew Bennett? He never made those lists.
Right.
Yeah, he made millions in the National Football
League.
Drew
Bennett is the rare, wasn't great in college, but got a shot in the NFL and became pretty good.
That's all you need is the opportunity, man. That's it.
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll have more coming in hour number two. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Pregame at 6:20, the first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. And it's all presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.